Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is Now or Never. And it's Feedback Friday. And if you believe in the power of prayer, please start to invoke, you know, whatever spiritual inclinations that you have. Let's just not be, you know, all bark and no bite. And so please do and encourage others. I mean, maybe what we need to do is help everybody start obtaining a conviction regarding the power of prayer. I mean, people hear this, but some people don't even know or understand because they've never seen it at work. They've never seen sacrifice and how sacrifice can actually help, you know, provide blessings, actually sanctify things and so forth. So, you know, there's, as I said last Monday, I think it was Monday, where I talked about the decline of Christianity. There are a lot of people walking. I'm going to dive back into this. So let me stop myself right there and continue on. The debt is fraud. That is not hyperbole. That is a fact. The debt is fraud. Now, even though people say, well, I mean, we've all been accepting it. No, I'm telling you right now, if somebody was actually having access to your account and you just found out, you would not just say, and we're accepting that. You would actually say, stop. You have no authority to do that. And just because there is 100,000 people, maybe I have that large of a crowd, 100,000 people isn't even 1% of America. Even if I had that kind of following, that is not even a pimple on the butt of communism. And so anyway, sorry for that colorful metaphor, but the debt is fraud, and we have to help everybody start understanding because, you know, it's not one hand that writes that check. It is every American and all 50 states, all states in this union, every body government from all 3,000 some odd counties to the 50 states, in addition to we the people. We all have to become committed and united on the Constitution and compliance to the Constitution. Until we get there, we can't actually take back and say, hey, no more. We're not paying this, and you're not writing that anymore, and we're moving forward. And all of those people who've been giving money, who understand they're giving money under the pretext that the people that are taking that money in our government have no authority to do so, nor do they have the authority to spend it on all the things that they're spending it on. This is all a huge facade. It's a huge body of fraud. We're being defrauded. So anyway, be aware of your predispositions so that you are not deceived. Now, before I dive into, you know, this body Christian and so forth, all of us have predispositions. In other words, we have biases. We have these things called paradigms. We see things, and the way we see things, we have a predisposition in how we see things. So in some ways, and I'll put it to you in this perspective, do you see the glass as half full? Or do you see the glass as half empty? Or do you just see that there's something in the glass and it is just filled to a certain point? And you're not making a judgment on the state of the filling of the glass. See, there's all sorts of ways you can see that glass. But there are lots of people that have predispositions to seeing the negative side, seeing the positive side, or seeing the objective side. We need you and we need America to become objective instead of judging and looking for a very specific thing or a specific outcome. Now, I say that because as we kind of look at what I stated regarding Christianity in America, I know that there are people that have these predispositions. You know, that if there's anything, you know, like certain words that can trigger them, then, you know, they allow themselves to be triggered. And I'm doing this because a brother sent me this prayer for George Washington, a prayer for the country. And the concern was, and I'll try to summarize, that this person considered it odd that he was asking people, citizens, to subordinate themselves to their government without any qualification, like the 10th Amendment. And so this prayer is, and I don't know the full history behind the prayer, but I do know that what we need to do when somebody gives us information, take a minute and place full context to the information. So I was given this prayer, and it's a, you know, one paragraph, and I'll read it, but I had to understand the context behind the prayer. When did George Washington write this prayer? Was it pre-Constitution? Was it pre-Revolutionary War? Was it amongst, in the midst of the Revolutionary War? Was it post his service in as the President of the United States? When did he write this prayer? Because I think when you read the prayer and then you understand what he's asking in the prayer, it places a little bit better clarity in his statement. So the prayer states this: I now make it my earnest prayer that God would have the United States in his holy protection, that he would incline the hearts of the citizens to cultivate a spirit of subordination and obedience to government, to entertain a brotherly affection and love for one another, for their fellow citizens of the United States at large, and particularly for their brethren who have served in the field, and finally, that he would most graciously be pleased to dispose of all to do justice, to love mercy, and to demean ourselves with that charity, humility, and pacified temper of mind which were the characteristics of the divine author of our blessed religion, and without a humble imitation of whose example in these things we can never hope to be a happy nation. Amen. Now, he wrote that in 1783, at the conclusion of the Revolutionary War. So when we look at the United States was a confederation, right? It was a republic, but it was a confederation that had, the confederation had very limited powers. As a matter of fact, that we know now, and we were already learning at that point in time, the confederation, the Articles of Confederation were, and actually, so it was in June. So by this point in time, they had three amendments that were trying to change the Articles of Confederation, because the Articles of Confederation and the Continental Congress had no real powers. And so I think he wanted to make basically, you know, try to help the nation actually succeed with providing the necessary energies, maybe to the Articles of Confederation as well as the Continental Congress. But I mean, this is where I'm only speaking in analysis. Bottom line, I don't see it was George Washington's wish that we actually be subjects, you know, pure subjects, like subjects to a king, where we have to submit to a sovereign. And I don't see at that point in time that the government was ever going to be like that. That's not the direction of the nation. As a matter of fact, the state, but he's talking about the general body of the people who are united under the Articles of Confederation. Now, I would love to have seen him write a prayer for the nation, but we already see he did kind of write a prayer for the nation. It was called his farewell address. And so it was far more than a prayer. It was several pages. And it was detailed in warning us about factions, warning us about, you know, rushing to give government the, you know, with the ambitions of good intent, warning to not give government the ability to just do things without properly delegating those things. He mentions the amendments and the necessities of amendments. Now, I used to cover the farewell address. I haven't done it for a while because there's just that much to it. I just recommend anybody and everybody to read it because in that, he kind of warns us and he spells out the necessity. And I think I made point of this already in several conversations this in the past few weeks that George Washington, when he was stepping away, he had the opportunity to either write his own or use the one that Madison gave him in 1794, or use the one, actually, I think it was 1793, because I think that's when he was stepping out, right? 1793? Let me see. 89 is the first year, second year, third year, fourth year. So, yeah, so I believe it was 93 when he was serving in his fourth year to become, you know, to whether he was going to serve or not. So I think that's when Madison wrote that. And after 1793, with Jefferson stepping down and then Hamilton stepping down and Washington losing faith in his friends and Madison no longer serving in Congress, because the Federalists were taking strength and they were, you know, basically unifying on a big government movement. This was under the tutelage or under the guidance of Hamilton. Hamilton was moving this nation towards a big government nation, and they actually started showing by 1798 real tyrannical tendencies with the Alien Sedition Acts, taking away the right of expression, the right of speech. So I think ultimately Washington was actually seeing this nation being torn apart by factions. And I think he may have been the one that included that by his own hand. But I think much of that farewell address actually came from Madison, not from Hamilton. And I know the Hamilton camp is out there saying, oh, no, he came to Hamilton and asked him. And I honestly believe Hamilton gave him a bunch of crap. I honestly believe Hamilton basically tried to get the president to say, well, you know, we need to allow the government to make implications that they can do things and allow them to do what they feel is necessary, because that's exactly what Hamilton was pushing for. By using the Federalist Papers and slowly empowering. Now, I am making a judgment and an assessment that doesn't make it right. But I'm making a judgment and assessment because of how Hamilton acted. The only way we really know is actually talking to the man or being there and having a more accurate read on all of the nuances. But nevertheless, when we kind of step back and try to start making decisions, we actually have to stop being judgmental. And so in talking about, you know, last week, Christianity and how John Adams pontificated and how we can't listen to those words in context as accurate. Not that these men were prophets. These men were basically making comments due to their own predispositions. This is a tendency of a human being. Every person creates their predispositions, and so they say things, they hear things, they receive information, and they provide information based on how their predispositions, their paradigms are. And Adams was one of those guys that had, you know, the Puritan upbringing, and he looked at this nation that Constitution could only, it was written only for the righteous. Now, that really sounds great. But does that take away, you know, the divine providence of our Creator? You've heard me say that our Creator, only He knew what we would be dealing with in these days. And you've heard me say that only He knew what we would need, and He gave us everything we needed in that Constitution. So, as I pointed out, that we have lost, there's a huge decline in America over Christianity. I do not think we have 50%. I think that Christianity may be a majority in as far as faith and religion, but it is not a majority of the people. So in other words, I think, not even think, I've asserted that our Creator understood this. He understood that this nation would be led astray. We would allow ourselves to start going down that path and let the camel whose nose got into the tent actually kick us out of this tent. So if He knew that, then He had to have understood that this Constitution had to be able to sustain that type of shift. In other words, if the Constitution was written only for a righteous people, then it's no longer valid and good. And I'm telling you, that's wrong. He gave us something that was actually capable of helping us save ourselves. And all we have to do is use the recipe, follow the directions in taking back our government. And here's the question. Do you need to be a church-going, righteous, Christian person to hold government accountable to the enumerated powers and to keep them within the scope of the Constitution? No. As a matter of fact, do you need to be a righteous person or a Christian to actually expect people live within the confines of a contract? Contracts are made well outside the bounds of Christianity. All races, kindreds, religions, and so forth. When you have two people working together, you create contracts. Marriage is a contract, and every faith and every culture has that contract of marriage. So, this is why I see the divine hand of providence actually transcend in giving us a document that transcends this migration of a righteous nation into this debasement and debauchery that we're literally on the brim of falling into. And I see that we actually have everything we need to actually pull us back. This is why the oath of office is in the Constitution. Now we have a legal basis that they are required. All we have to do is hold them to that. Well, do we have a mechanism in the Constitution to hold them to that? No, it's not a convention of states. I'm tired of hearing that. The convention of states is only a mechanism of actually changing the Constitution. So, what is the mechanism of holding public servants to their oath? Right there in the First Amendment, it's called the right of petition. We have a right to petition them for the redress of grievances. Hold them accountable. Oh, okay. So if we hold them accountable and they do nothing, do we have anything in the Constitution that says you have now failed and are no longer eligible to be in office? Yeah, we do, folks. That's the third section of the 14th Amendment. So, isn't it interesting that it required the 14th Amendment to seal the deal to make sure that us in these days at this time have everything we need to actually gain control of our government? Do you think that in the Civil War we were still a righteous nation? Well, I can tell you, as we look at how people were steering this ship, there were many hands on the helm. Many hands were trying to steer this ship in one direction or another. Not righteously, for serving themselves, serving agendas or what have you. And as a matter of fact, those agendas are driven by the party, which is one of the reasons why the parties are inherently bad. The only party that should exist isn't the party of you know, a Republican, Democrat, or anything like that. The only thing that should exist is the party of the citizen. The party of the citizen is the party that demands compliance to the Constitution. The other party is those people who are seeking to destroy the Constitution, which is why you've heard me say that those people who are not actively a part of the citizen party holding people accountable and openly attacking the Constitution are no longer or should no longer be considered citizens. They should be losing their citizenship. I'm just connecting the dots here, folks. It's not that hard. As a matter of fact, we have all the precedents. We have all the history. It's not that hard. So, as I covered, and as I've been going over this and over this, we have the need to appeal to heaven to bless us as we act in faith in holding people accountable, that the Spirit will work through those words and through the demand of accountability to those people who, you know, may not be of Christian faith, but they recognize the sanctity of a contract. They recognize the sanctity of a law, that upholding the law is the only way to move forward, because if we actually allow government to rule with arbitrary rule, we're done for. And I think most people recognize that. I mean, in Cambodia, Pol Pot, when he took over as the communist leader, how many people in Cambodia were Christian? Probably not very many at all. And as a matter of fact, they're probably all Buddhist. The fact of the matter is, Pol Pot knew who his enemies were. His real enemies, when he took over, which is why he created the killing fields, he went through the population and gathered together all of those who had education, all of those who understood market principles, you know, economic principles, those types of things, so that he could not be criticized. And he actually killed all of these people who were a perceived threat to his new state of communism. And that's what gave them the killing fields. That is what happens during a communist revolution. They just start killing people that are perceived as threats. That's why when you look at the French Revolution, that's exactly what that revolution was a revolution that was in the direction of tyranny. It was in the direction of creating a statist government. And what ended up happening was it created a godless dictator. I can't say godless, but it created a dictator instead. Instead of creating a communist Politburo and all of that. So let me just leave it there, folks. If you're going to appeal to heaven and then go to work and do nothing in holding public servants accountable, then don't complain to me. Don't complain to me when this nation falls off the cliff. I don't want to hear it, because you did it. The only thing you need to do is act in faith and follow and connect the dots and follow the directions in the Constitution in holding our public servants accountable. And don't tell me it's difficult to get to your county commissioners. I'm not asking you to get in your car and drive to D.C. I'm not asking you to go down to your state capital. I know some of these states, your capital can be hours, half a day or a day away. Some of the states are that big. But your county seat is close. You are able to sign petitions. Don't tell me, when you're walking in and you see those people with First Amendment petitions in your grocery stores or, you know, standing outside the grocery store, don't tell me that you didn't have the time to just go over and sign those things, or you couldn't spare any time to get involved. If you're going to the games, if you're able to watch the news, then you're able to help take this country back. Period. And nobody uses up their 24 hours a day as efficaciously to a point where they can't help. I don't buy it. We'll be right back. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so as we kind of dive into the last part of my feedback, one of the things we kind of covered going through the Constitution, Tammy and I, and yeah, we need more Tammy. I get that comment from a lot of people that, Tammy, please speak up and ask questions because, I'm sure she has, they love her comments. Anyway, as we kind of have gone through the 13th Amendment and diving into the 14th, I think it's easy to conclude that we have some problems. As a matter of fact, I mentioned this when we went into the Bill of Rights regarding the very first amendment that was actually ratified but is still yet to be a part of the law. It has been actually scuttled, and they're trying to hide this. So it doesn't matter what I say. What matters is what the states say. And so this is why, when we want to conclude what is ultimately going to be constitutional, what isn't ultimately constitutional, that conversation first starts in the county, in these constitutional compliance committees. And therefore, as these committees are established and start guiding their county legislators, those county legislators then start declaring to the state and their fellow county legislators throughout the state, what is the fact? Here are the facts. Ultimately, when the states, enough states have actually started doing this, folks, it doesn't take much to do. But ultimately, when the states are actually, pulling together and uniting in holding the government fully accountable, then and only then can the states actually start creating this definitive what is going to be constitutional. Not in regards to amending the Constitution or changing the Constitution, but those things that were already submitted. In other words, the bottom line is this is when the states actually initiate what we call the audit and the conclusions, or republic review. Republic review is when the states, with their authority and with enough authority, in other words, we have a majority control over that Congress. And I've mentioned this in talking to Tammy, that it doesn't need to be three-fourths. All you need to do is have a commitment by enough states, and I think 29 easily, I think maybe 28, I'd have to go look, but it's not important. It's less than 30, and so when you have 29 states, if there are Democrats that are coming from those states that are in Congress, and the states basically declare that you will abide by the Constitution and start invoking the changes necessary to get into compliance. And if those Democrats, when they're first, faced with the opportunity of whether they do it or not, because remember, folks, they are bound by oath that they must support the Constitution. They don't have a choice. They're legally required. And now when the states petition them to do their cotton-picking job, then the states will be able to pull back every Republican or Democrat that refuses to actually support the Constitution. If they think they can hide in plain sight, then they're sadly mistaken. It kind of reminds me, and I think I told the story a long time ago, where my mother, my grandmother, made cookies, and my father was just a little kid, and she told me this story. It was just, you know, one of those that you kind of just imagine your parent being a little child, and he stole a cookie, and he was under the table eating it, and grandma came in and said, you know, son, have you taken a cookie, and are you eating it? And he said, no, and because he was just little, very little, and she says, you know, God knows if you're lying, and he says, well, he can't see me under the table because he didn't have this perception that, you know, God is all seeing all. He believed that, you know, he could be hiding in plain sight. And so I am here to tell you that these Democrats and Republicans cannot hide in plain sight. If they refuse to execute what the states tell them to do, they will be quickly extradited back. If there's a necessity of the states creating a law that it makes it a felony for them to violate their oath when demanded by the state and or the people of the state to comply, because what's going to happen is we have to change and mature as a nation. Either we mature or we're destroyed. Right? We're in a state of metamorphosis. And I believe that the design of this Constitution was to actually allow the metamorphosis to occur so that, because we're looking at as I've been saying, the dreadful day of the Lord. I think that as we create this new tone of compliance to the law, it sets the stage for the millennium of a rule where people are lovers of the law and they follow the law. And you place that in context with the revelations, and those types of things, you go, huh, that absolutely makes sense. And if you understand how the Constitution was designed to allow all states to, come into it as they transition into the laws, the currencies, those types of things, it takes time to do that, right? So as they finally are ultimately and finally admitted into the union, we create a world government of lovers of the law. Now, we do know that there are cultures and governments that do not love the law. They only love their theocracies and so forth. Well, those governments can't come in. But I'm thinking, because as I look at what those governments are today, I'm thinking that those governments won't be standing when all's said and done. But nevertheless, the point is this, is that Republic Review will purge and force compliance. Actually, most people think that Republic Review will start with 29 states and end with 29 states. What will end up happening is states like California, New York, and the rest of the real blue states, they will join in Republic Review because they're going to want to do what they can to thwart it, because they have to be involved or they'll try to secede. Now, you've heard me say that every state in America can secede when the federal government is violating the Constitution. Now, if you think a state can secede when the states are demanding that the federal government be in compliance with the Constitution, and these other states will say, well, if that's the case, we're going to secede from the union. Sorry, they can't. Remember, you can only secede when the government is actually violating the Constitution. That's one of the reasons why the southern states had that wide open door to walk away, because at that point in time, the federal government was invoking punitive taxes and punitive laws on the southern states. In other words, they were violating the Constitution because they had to be uniform. And they were violating the spirit and the letter of the Constitution. And the North was getting away with it for decades. And I'm just here to tell you that because it was being violated, they legitimately seceded, and they did secede, which means that they had to be readmitted. California cannot just walk away. And if California tries to walk away, then the union has the responsibility of going in and unseating and removing all of those petty tyrants who think they can actually defy the rights of the citizens, the good citizens of California. Because as long as there's one citizen in California, the union has the responsibility of holding California to the law, not the arbitrary unconstitutional laws that have been created, these huge bureaucracies. We're just talking about those things that are constitutional. And I'm telling you, these blue states, they're going to realize this, they're going to get this, and they're going to think. So if there's going to be an armed conflict in America, if it is to save America, that armed conflict will actually be going into these states, actually removing, capturing and removing these tyrants who are getting away with murder and tyranny. And that's let me ask you this. Just ponder on this. How divine is this Constitution when you look at it as not only the ability to solve the problems at the federal level? We have we have this little button on our government called self-cleaning, and it's called the Constitution. And that government, you know, that oven that, you know, you have that little button self-cleaning, that button on your oven does not do the full job where the Constitution will. But it not only self-cleans the oven itself, but this oven or this button self-cleans the house, the whole house, the whole body of the union and government, the governments of the union. And so do you understand this? Do you understand the divine nature of the Constitution, as I have just kind of explained this, that by using the Constitution in the function of self-cleaning, it is capable of cleaning up our federal government all the way down to our county governments. Amazing. Amazing that we have a document capable of doing that. There's never been a document like this in the governance of mankind, period. Never. And I'm just telling you, folks, that we have been so blessed. So blessed. I mean, I'm tongue-tied. It is an indictment, or it is a manifestation of his love for us. It's that special. Because he wants us to have liberty. Our Creator wants us to be able to make our own decisions, to be able to choose for ourselves whether we're going to make a mistake or not. And if we do, we have to live up to the consequences. And that's okay. You know, we have to, as a people, we have to stop scorching and leave it to the person, especially regardless of what they've done. I mean, we have laws to hold them accountable. But in many of the things, whether that be a moral issue or what have you, in those types of aspects, we have to stop thinking that this Constitution is only for a righteous people. It is for all of us. It is for those who are drinkers and carousers. It is the way to help them out of those positions and situations. Because eventually and ultimately, we can create a government where we don't have to have prohibition, where we choose to actually do what's best for ourselves, for our families, and for our neighbors, for society, and for him, and all in his name. So now that the lecture is over, let me get back into why counties matter most. Let me get back into what I was just talking about in the ratification debates regarding poll taxes, because we were talking about the election and poll taxes. And so, because that kind of came up in a side comment, and I do want to get back to making all elections local. It is relevant to actually start understanding that you have to have a dog in that fight. You have to have, you know, some stake. You have to have something that actually brings you to, you know, a ticket to be able to vote on an issue. If you own property, then you should be able to vote. I want you to put this in context to foreign ownership of property. Bottom line, if they own property, they should be able to vote, which is why they cannot legally and legitimately own property, because they are not citizens. They have to be a fully qualified citizen as a corporation, person, or entity. This is why foreign governments cannot invest. I mean, it's one thing to loan America money, taking on debt for legitimate debt. Again, going back to the law is very specific. They have the ability to take on debt for these purposes only. If it is not enumerated, they cannot take that debt on, nor can they spend money on their own on things not enumerated. This goes back to the massive fraud. So, this isn't that complicated, and I'm not really a complicated person. I'm probably the dumbest guy in the room. I think that there's many of you that, you know, are understanding this. I think the real problem isn't necessarily the understanding. It is the lack of action. And so this is why we actually have to start convincing ourselves to spend time, to consecrate a little time out of the day, out of the week, and out of the month of contributing to take back the law and our government, and holding our public servants fully accountable. Okay, so there's a lot to go through regarding making all elections local. So that's what I want to do, because we've been talking about foreign influence, and I've kind of, you know, I need to, let's capture this concept of what foreign influence is. Foreign influence can be an endorsement. If Putin comes along and says, I endorse Kamala Harris, that right there should be against the law. And as a matter of fact, I believe that we should actually not allow those types of statements or what have freedom of the press. I believe that we should, you know, we can't arrest Putin, but we can actually make sure that those foreign influences are not being transmitted. Because this is where somebody of a pop nature, you know, because look at Trump. Right, wrong, or indifferent, Trump is one of those guys who goes out of his way to say, I like this guy, I like that guy. He's trying to be a god maker in states. What we should be doing is we should be having tests. Every person that runs for office should actually pass a test. And I'm not talking about a religious test. The Constitution forbids that. I've talked about having constitutional tests. This way, it doesn't matter what anybody says, because the day we start having tests and we start voting based on the abilities and capabilities of the individual's understanding of the Constitution and whether they carry those things out. Because, you know, we could have probably gotten a good test outcome from Obama. But when we look at how he responded and how he acted as a senator, even though he may have passed the test, his actions would have actually shown that he violated those answers that he knew he was supposed to, you know, you can't do that. You can't do this. You're supposed to do that. And based on his actions and based on the tests, you could say, you know what? You tested right. So this means you know what you're doing. And so therefore, we can actually commit you and punish you. We need to get to a point where we actually do, we close the end on this, because eventually, and I've kind of talked a lot about capital punishment, that a nation that reveres the law to be so cherished to where they, you know, they harshly punish the people, is when the people start transitioning into not ever thinking of defying the law, especially when they're good, and I'll use the word righteous laws. When I say that, they're laws that protect the liberty of all. A righteous law is not protecting somebody from their feelings being hurt. This is America. We have our right to be offended. You shouldn't be able to create laws that, you know, keep people from saying things, but we want to make sure that certain influences are constrained. And once we get to a point where we actually have tests, we don't even need to not publish those. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I've talked about, and it's been a long time since I mentioned this, that we need to actually start using measures of going after our media, or what I should say, our platforms. When newspapers, TV shows, or I should say TV news, anybody that's out there running a propaganda mill, that's what platforms are, propaganda mills. When they're actually out there running the propaganda mill, and they're throwing these little sound bites of, oh, Putin supports this person, Trump supports that, or what have you, and it's done by an agenda to influence us, then we need to attack, because that's not the freedom of speech. That is a guided and weaponized speech designed to manipulate people. Now, it's one thing for an individual to do that, but it's another thing for a platform to actually make sure that everything that they print is akin to that message. Because now it's about controlling and only giving you that message. There's a huge difference between the leftist out there that can't vote. Because let's look at it. When we actually get to this utopia where a person that's a leftist is not a citizen anymore, or they're on their way to not becoming a citizen because they're trying to insurrect against the Constitution. Once they cross that line and they, you know, we say, you know what you're doing is an insurrection against the Constitution. You lose your citizenship. The question is this: does that person have the freedom of the press, the right of expression, and these rights and privileges that are offered to a U.S. citizen? No, they're not. Now we've put that person into context so that if they print something, it shouldn't be printed. Because they don't have that right. They've proven that they can't be trusted. So, when we start understanding this binary, we actually start understanding that keeping people who are actually enemies of the Constitution, keeping them here is a fool's errand. You've heard me say that the scripture tells us to not allow the enemy to live among us. When we look at the Tory Acts were clear. You are not going to be an enemy living among us. We will get rid of you. Those warning shots were sent throughout the Tory Acts. The sentiments were there. And they capitalized and executed that concept when they won the war. This is why all of those Tories were exported and lost everything. Bill Gates is running an insurrection against the Constitution. All of these billionaires, Elon Musk, running an insurrection against the Constitution. All of them. All of them would then actually lose everything and they would be deported. Now, they've got these ways of hiding and stuffing and so forth. But I'm just telling you that once we get there, because the good doctor that I work with constantly says we have to be able to get that back, and we can. But the reality is, to getting back the wealth and getting back our property and fulfilling, you know, actualizing those things that are ours that were taken from us by these people is, you know, is somebody else's task. We'll have the ability to do it. But I will tell you that the way I see it, it may require deadly force. And so the question is, how important is the paper and how important is the gold? Remember, paper has no value, but gold does. And wherever that gold went, wherever our gold is, if it's ours, it's ours. And so it's the gold that we need back. The paper, we shouldn't even care about. The property, if the property's still here, it's just knocking down the fence, changing the title, or what have you. But the mechanisms of being able to make America whole can't happen until we actually have a government that is enamored, love, and executing faithfully the law. It's that simple. This is why we have to start exercising the, you know, the powers given to us, the people, in that Constitution. And how we have to unite as a people in a local area on that Constitution. And in so doing, as we start holding our public servants accountable and replacing them and nurturing new people that love the Constitution and understand the importance, we are then going to be creating a new class of people for history that will be ranked with the Thomas Jeffersons and James Madisons of old. It will be a new, instead of a forefather, a midfather, or a midparent, or whatever you want to call that generation of people that fully restored liberty to all people. You know, there are way too many people that are trying to figure out how they can get their hands on the purse strings or get their share of the pie. Self-serving people. Organizations that do not unite on the Constitution. You know, organizations like the John Birch Society, the Convention of States. Those organizations that are myopic, stubborn, and want to do things their way so that they can maintain their share of the pie, they are a huge part of the problem. There are good people in the John Birch Society as well as the Convention of States. Great people. They're just selling themselves short by allowing their loyalties to go towards a myopic agenda instead of unifying on restoring the law and holding our government and our public servants accountable. That is what we have to do. We have to start holding our public servants accountable because he gave us the ability in the Constitution to do that. Then we will have our government, then we will have our peace, and then we will have justice. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.